Hello and welcome to Still Buffering, a cross-generational guide to the culture that made us. I am Riley Smurl.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
And I'm Taylor Smurl.
And I'm guessing we're all about to order some new furniture.
Yep.
It was already ordered.
Everybody got a new couch this year for Pride. We didn't repeal any of that legislation that is limiting to queer people, but we got couches.
IKEA couches.
On a side note, before we get into these magnificent queer couches, I will say, though, in West Virginia, I think that the terribly discriminatory transgender athlete ban will not stand and will be overturned.
I agree.
And
well, that's good.
They will let Becky run. Yes. I believe that is the direction we're headed because it was unconstitutional.
It was bad in the first place.
Violates Title IX and is also like a piece of crap law. But yeah. Anyway, that's a good note. So, IKEA couches.
Oh my God.
Taylor, I'm very jealous of the trans couch.
I think they're very cute. I like them both. I mean, I think they're all cool. Don't get me wrong. I don't think there's a single one of them that I don't think is fascinating.
Yes.
I think as far as what I might put in my house, that cute little cloud couch, absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
I think the pansexual couch is really cute. She's a little modern design moment.
Yeah, I thought, so IKEA released a line of queer couches, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
Can you buy them?
No, they're not. They were just like, they paired, I think, a designer and an artist or a writer or something for each one. Somebody in the community, and they had them work together to design these unique couches. So they are not for sale, which I don't think most of these are practical couches.
I mean, I think that there are several that would work quite well as couches. I mean, you know what I mean?
Yes.
would work as couches.
They look comfy seats. And you could sit on them.
Yeah.
Or love seats. Yes.
Oh,
yes, that's true.
Love seats.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
I really like the gender fluid one, I think was the color palette and design style that I like the best. But a lot of people have been talking about the bisexual couch.
Yes.
Saying the bisexual couch.
There's
so much to unpack about that couch.
Uh-huh.
First is that if you just look at half of it, it just says nobody believes you.
Yes.
That's what I just can't stop looking at.
Yeah, it's unfortunate that is the way it could be interpreted. Because I certainly don't think that is what the artist intended.
No. The artist is bisexual, and he said it was a line he wrote in a poem when he was in high school about the erasure he faced.
Because the other one says, when you say and instead of or.
Right, then nobody believes you.
Yeah. Yes, that's what it says, yes. I think that the other thing is the inclusion of the arms on the couch. And the hands, so couches have arms. I know what you're thinking, but like they have like human arms
literal,
on top of the arms,
like 3D
bubblegum pink. They look like shiny, maybe some sort of latex or plastic.
Yes,
arms that go on top of the arms, and then little hands that are reaching around the sides of the couch, which is just horrifying.
It's a little scary.
And you know, I want to say that this is all in good fun that we bring it up. Cause, you know, ultimately, from where I'm sitting, I love it. It's horrifying and I love it. It's spooky. It's weird. I want it in my living room. I wish I could buy it.
That part of it specifically does sort of suit you, Tay.
Oh yeah, like, no, it's like
all the hands and the arms reaching
like
out from a couch.
A little bit Suspiria. It's a little bit Junji Ito. It's a little bit Lady Gaga. I don't know. I like it though.
The only thing I wish, and like I saw the artist on Twitter saying like all the jokes about it are in good fun. It's gotten lots of positive feedback. I don't mind. You know, he's not offended. He's been retweeting lots of the memes about them. And I understand the message, and I can relate to the message of it. But all the other ones feel like a pretty celebration, you know, of, like, your identity.
Right.
This one feels like, do you remember how much it can suck to tell people you're bisexual? Think about it.
But
you know what I mean? Like,
valid.
All the other ones feel like a celebration, and this one is the only one that feels like this is what's hard.
I agree.
Yes.
I agree with you. But I will say that as an aggressive, angry bisexual, I feel represented. I feel seen.
See, I just want something soft and pretty.
So is this you in couch form?
This is me as if I was a couch. This, I also have 500 hands. A lot of people don't know that about me. Because I'm only on podcasts, so you can't see me. But I, at this moment, I have 500 hands reaching out of my body in the colors of the bisexual flag.
Right.
As most doctors do.
Yeah.
I like that the artist came out to address the confusion over the phrasing, and I think that's valid. No comment on the hands. No comment.
No comment on the hands.
That's what I need to understand. Please.
I just want
to
know.
What? I mean, because the thing is, like, this couch upset Ben Shapiro.
And it won.
Right. Yes, like, if I was a couch, I would want to upset Ben Shapiro. As a human, one of my goals in life is if I can do something to upset Ben Shapiro, I will feel really good about like what I did on this earth. Like that. Good.
I think that's like the bar for making good art right now. Like, if it makes Ben Shapiro mad, you made something good. You made a good song. You made a cool couch. Mm-hmm.
And it was. That's to right. The point where he even said, forget about the politics of it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He's just so mad at this bisexual couch. Oh, yes.
He called it unthinkably fugly.
Famously aesthetic, Ben Shapiro.
Yeah.
I know.
Famously stylish.
Well, he's a craftsman, you see. He once went to Home Depot, bought a single piece of wood, put it inside a plastic bag, and walked outside of Home Depot and took a picture of himself with it. So
he could go home and make a
he's a craftsman.
You can make a homophobic couch with that. It's just one sad plank of wood.
with his one sad piece of wood. You know, you can't even buy pieces of wood of that. Like, did he have it cut anyway? That was what Jess and I kept going on about. Like, did he have it cut to that length?
He had to have asked for a bag for it.
Could you cut it to the length where I could fit it in a bag and then put it in a bag? And some poor person who works at Home Depot had to do that for him.
For Ben Shapiro.
Anyway. Yeah.
Anyways.
I don't know. I also want to say, I don't know if this is some sort of Rorschach test that I have passed, failed, or whatever it said about me. But when I looked at the asexual couch, I saw a vagina.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also did.
I don't know what that says about me.
Yeah.
This is not a statement that I disliked it. I'm just saying that I looked at the colorful sort of, it looks like it must be textural, like furry part of it. And I thought that reminds me somewhat of a vagina.
See, I saw a lot of people saying it looks like a geode, which, you know, I don't know. Maybe it is the Rorschach test.
Well, okay. Well,
I failed.
Yeah. Or passed.
Oh. Well,
I don't know. I don't know. One way or the other, it said something definitively that I did not see now that you say that, I could see
I could see that now.
But my first thought was, that reminds me of a vagina.
I think the progress couch, the one with all the beautiful flowers, you could not sit on that thing, but it is gorgeous.
I do love that.
It is gorgeous.
All the rainbow flowers across it.
Yeah.
I do love that.
See, I think I relate most to that couch because it's so pretty and aesthetic. Do not sit on me. I will stab you.
I'll have to get Charlie to weigh in on some of these couches.
She's just going to like the trans one.
She will like the trans one best. Well, I don't know. She would appreciate a couch that you cannot sit on but only look at too, like the flower couch. Like she would, Charlie would get that.
How do you think she'd feel about the hands?
Well, she might be scared, and then that would be the new thing she's scared of this week.
Right. I mean, they are pink.
That's true.
But that would be, I mean, it scared me a little bit.
I think more furniture needs to have disembodied hands as a designing aesthetic. I don't know. Have we considered this as just want a chair with some hands that just, you know, just coming just up from around. You can hold them so you don't feel alone and you're void of life.
Oh. Oh, well, that got sad. You know what didn't scare my kids? Fern Gully.
There you go. Also has a hand motif at the beginning.
This is true. There is a whole hand thing.
Fern Gully scared me existentially.
Did it scare you?
Yes, because I was like, oh, the world is even more like this now. Oh, no.
This is true. 1992 animated classic film, Fern Gully. About the last rainforest, And it's fairy protectors and the evil humans who are trying to destroy it.
And Tim Curry.
Yes. And Tim Curry. Before I get into this movie, this was your first viewing?
Yes, it was mine. Oh, wow. I had never seen this before.
Yes.
Not that I remember anyways. It may have been one of those things that we had anyways and Mom turned on at some point, but I didn't remember it.
Did you enjoy it?
Yeah. I did. Again, it just gave me like a little bit of an existential crisis. It's like, oh no, the world. No, the environment. No. Okay.
The music is pretty good.
Music is good. I like the story. It made me a little bit sad at the end. I teared up. But I liked it.
I'll get to that. I don't want to spoil it yet. As I was watching it with Charlie and Cooper, I got a little nervous because like the general idea is you have this little fairy Krista and her fairy friends and they protect the forest. She accidentally shrinks Zach, a human, down to her fairy size. And he was secretly part of a team that was destroying the rainforest.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't want her to know. And then the humans release the evil god Hexus.
Tim Curry.
The evil god Tim Curry.
The evil god Tim Curry Hexus, who is made out of oil and smoke and is going to destroy Fern Gully. For revenge, because the fairies locked him in a tree centuries ago.
Yeah.
I will say that I was a little nervous that Charlie and Cooper would be scared of the oily smoke monster.
Mm. He is pretty scary.
Texas.
Yeah.
Not only were they not scared of him, Charlie said, as he was singing his song, Toxic Love, is he gonna die? Because I really like this song, so I kind of don't want him to.
I think that is the magic of Tim Curry. He can play any character, and it's not even like an attraction thing. It's just like that is just that needs to be preserved. He needs to be preserved at all costs, in all forms. Evil Tim Curry, Satan Tim Curry, good Tim Curry, all good Tim Curry.
They loved both of them, just totally enchanted by this horrible pollution monster.
I would have expected that from Cooper, not from Charlie.
Both of them obsessed with the pollution monster, worried about him at the end. Is he okay? He's locked in another tree. Spoiler. He gets locked in
spoiler
another
alert
tree. They do save Fern Gully, the last rainforest.
Yes.
But there's so much work to be done. I was impressed with, so Tim Curry is in this movie. Christian Slater is in this
That's
movie.
That's what I was going to say. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Robin Williams.
Those are the only two I knew.
Robin Williams.
Robin Williams' first animated voice role.
Mm-hmm.
This is pre-Genie.
Yes. Yeah. Wow. Barely pre-Genie, but yes, pre-Genie. Yeah.
Disney actually tried to kind of interfere with him being in this movie because they didn't want him to be two recognizable like animated characters in the same year, but he refused to leave the project.
Yeah, I thought it was really interesting. I was trying to read. I found myself wondering about Fern Gully, why it was like this. It held this special place in my heart and in my like childhood. And then like, did anybody else ever watch this? was this a big thing or was it just a weird us thing? Because sometimes I'm learning things are just weird us things.
Sure.
And it was a big like battle when they started, these Australian animators who started making this movie, and then they sort of like went and stole some animators from Disney in the process.
Drama.
Like some young, up-and-coming, really great animators they kind of took to work on their project, and Disney was really mad about it. And was, I don't know if that was why it was sort of this sort of like quiet cult favorite as opposed to this big hit. And I mean, the other thing is like Aladdin came out later that same year.
Sure.
Which was, you know, gigantic. But the animator who designed Hexus, the monster, the smoke monster person, is the same one who designed Ursula for Disney's Little Mermaid.
I can see that.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But I thought that was interesting. Because I actually found myself Googling, like, what's the deal with Fern Gully?
And now I'm wishing Ursula would have been played by Tim Curry.
That would be cool.
Now I want to know about that animator, because Ursula was partially inspired by Divine.
Yes.
And if you've got inspiration from Divine and you understand the magic of Tim Curry, I'm like, this animator knew what was up. He's got good taste.
I'll have to look her up. The animator who was
interesting.
Look them up. I'll figure it out. But anyway, yeah, that was what I had read, because I was reading. I found an article titled like, "Why was Disney annoyed with Fern Gully?" I was like, "Oh, I don't know. Why were they?" But anyway, so I think that there was like a generation of us who, for whatever reason, saw Fern Gully and took it to heart, mm-hmm. and felt like this sort of like, "Oh my gosh, I'm very scared now. We're destroying the planet and we must stop it." And then I guess not enough of us did anything about it is what I'm getting to.
Or not enough people saw Fern Gully.
Well, now, Sid, you did make us stop flushing the toilet when we peed for a while. So that's, you did what you could.
I did do that.
Save a flush.
Have your kids become like little environment warriors now?
Eco warriors. That's what they call themselves.
Yes.
Charlie specifically. I mean, Cooper still doesn't quite get it, but that was why we started recycling and composting regularly. It was Charlie had heard about it from a video and asked why. Because when we moved, we had stopped recycling just because they stopped picking it up here. Mm. And anyway, yeah. We had to get a fob and it was lazy. I apologize to planet Earth. Anyway, we recycle now.
To Fern Gully.
Yes, because Charlie was like, "You guys aren't doing enough to save the planet." And we were like, You're right. So, now, yes. So she's really into it. So she helps us take the recycling regularly and the composting is gross. So she won't help with that. But
I'm going to tell her she doesn't have to flush after she pees.
Yeah, she never flushes after anything. Okay. So she's already all over that.
She's unintentionally doing that already. Cool.
It's very upsetting for the rest of us who live in the house with her, but no, but we've talked about that and about like just the general idea of conspicuous consumption and waste. Mm-hmm. I mean, right, because like a lot of it these days isn't like pollution in the form of oil and smoke and smog and stuff. Like on an individual level, that's not right. What you're worried about. It's like, how many more microplastics do we want to be responsible mm-hmm. for, you know, unleashing on the environment. Mm-hmm. So we talk a lot about that.
Yeah. I was surprised. I don't think peripherally aware of this movie.
That's so weird.
Yeah. I don't know if this is just like a generational thing, that it wasn't one of those movies that held on for the future generations. I don't know if it was the magic of Disney. They were like, we got to cover up this.
Of Disney. Yes. To make other animated movies disappear.
Yes, we have to make any other non-Disney animated movie fade from existence.
Uh-huh. Hey, pals, you don't want to watch that rainforest movie. That sounds like a bummer. We've got a big blue genie.
How, Mickey?
Thanks, Mickey. Nice of you to stop by. But yeah, I was not even vaguely aware of its existence until you mentioned it.
That is wild to me, because Taylor, how many times did we watch this movie?
I was gonna say, especially like every line of Baddies, I remember quoting, like that was just part of our vocabulary as kids. Just, you know, I have but one claw, mm-hmm. but beware. Price check on prune yep. juice, Bob. Price check on prune juice. Like, that's just how we communicated for, I don't know, years.
I used to think the line, tails, humans don't have tails.
They have big bottoms that they wear with bad shorts. And they walk around going, hi, Helen.
Hi, Helen. That to me was like peak comedy. Like, I thought nothing will ever be funnier than that observational humor about humans.
Yeah. Well,
you know, and that's like there are a lot of, I think, you know, I mean, there were attractive animated characters in this movie. There are beautiful fairy people. Zach is very cool. But watching it again, I'm like, I was obsessed with Batty. Batty
me
was,
too.
He was creepy, but he was also sweet and he was funny. And you know, the original role that Robin Williams took was like 8 minutes of recorded dialogue, but he ad-libbed so much that they animated a bunch more scenes and expanded the role of Batty because there was just so much good stuff.
Well, I mean, it makes sense because he really, like, as a kid, I mean, as an adult, I don't necessarily find, now it's a lot more nostalgia, yeah. but as a kid, like, that's what kids look for in those sort of movies and remember, mm-hmm. you know, like my children love the Frozen movies and they, you know, want to be the princesses and they like the stories. But Olaf is what they were obsessed with,
right,
and thought was hilarious and wanted to see more of, mm-hmm, because Olaf is funny. And that was Batty.
Well, but you know, but also like that song he sings about being tested on is terrifying. Like they did not pull any punches, yeah, with the lyrics of that song.
And I don't think I understood as a kid exactly what was happening. It's funny because as I was watching it, I was like, I don't know that it ever registered. This bat was being tortured in a lab.
Yeah.
And now, and that's what he's singing about in this. I don't know that it fully,
yeah,
because I don't think my kids fully got that as they were watching it. They were like, oh, he's weird, he's wacky. But I don't know that they fully understood, like, this is a commentary on animal testing. Because it is. It's dark. Yeah. Super dark. But, yeah, I don't know that it registered when he sang that awful song about it.
It almost made me glad I hadn't remembered seeing this as a child, because I feel like it's one of those movies that you watch as a kid and you know, like, oh, this is about the environment. But then you rewatch as an adult and you're like, oh, this is terrifying. Like, mm-hmm, the message of this movie, not like anything about the aesthetics or like anything, it's not scary, but just like thinking about, oh, this is terrifying.
Yes.
I'm glad I didn't have to have that realization that I watched that as a child. I'm glad I was experiencing it for the first time as an adult, where I could take some pauses and be like, okay, let's think about this for a minute. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's keep going.
I want to talk more about some of the aesthetics of the movie and the fairy people. But before I do that,
let's check the group message.
I want to tell you both about Ruby Coffee this week. I'm really excited. Still Buffering is supported in part by Ruby Coffee. Ruby Coffee Roasters is a small coffee roasting company. They are based in central Wisconsin, specifically Nelsonville, Wisconsin, population 191. I like that accuracy. I like that like precision.
Right.
191. And they have the goal of making amazing quality coffee approachable to all. We have had the opportunity to try Ruby Coffee, and I can tell you that, yes, it is amazing quality coffee. It's delicious, and it's easy. They have a lot of, it's not just like one form of coffee, let me say, because you have two different, so they have a steeped option with two different coffee blends, and this comes in like a single serve individually packed coffee filter bag. It's like a tea bag basically, but it's for coffee, which is great for us because sometimes I have an early morning and I'm getting out the door earlier than Justin, and so I don't necessarily want to brew a whole pot of coffee, mm-hmm, so that's perfect that I can just add some hot water, let it steep for 5 minutes, and I got a cup of coffee. And I didn't have to go through the trouble of, you know, grinding the beans and making a whole pot of coffee necessarily. And you can get a subscription so that you can order freshly roasted beans if that's what you want to do, or order the bags whenever you'd like, without a subscription. Whatever you want to do, Ruby Coffee has you covered. So the convenience, the quality, the taste, it's all there. And it's designed around complex, dynamic coffees, and making sure that our roasting profiles make these coffees easy to brew and enjoy. And like I said, I can't say enough about, I had never seen that sort of like coffee bag instead of tea bag option. So it's not just the quality of the coffee. It's that sort of convenience of having something great that is like instant coffee, but better, mm-hmm, than instant coffee, that you can have right there in the morning and get you going. So yeah. Taylor, if our listeners want to check out Ruby Coffee, what should they
do? Well, you should go to rubycoffeeroasters.com and use code BUFFERING to get 20% off your first shipment of any subscription, or 15% off of a one-time coffee purchase. It's rubycoffeeroasters.com.
So, the other thing that I realized as I was rewatching this movie, is like, I used to be obsessed with just the whole thing of Krista and Pips.
Mm-hmm.
those two. I never understood, and I still don't to this day, how the human who gets shrunk down to fairy size Zach comes into the picture while we've got Krista and Pips flying around in their little loincloths. That's still confusing. Oh,
like, why does he get sort of the romantic lead situation?
Yeah, I mean, yes, we have Pips, that redheaded fairy, in his loincloth, with his sexy armbands, voiced by Christian
Slater.
And
he leads like a Beatle gang. Like, that's cool.
This is one of those things that didn't seem inherently queer when you were young. Mm-hmm. But looking back, you're like, okay, now, hold on. I get it. Maybe I enjoyed this because this reason.
Well, I mean, like, looking at Krista the Fairy, a lot became clear. Like, oh, okay. Okay.
I always thought that she looked like, oh gosh, Farooja Balk in The Craft. Like, her hair and her, like, big blue eyes and smile. Like, the animation looks like animated Farooja Balk, who I always found incredibly attractive.
Yeah, I can see that. And I didn't understand, like, as an adult, it registers a lot more, like, Zach is such an offensive human initially. Like,
he's helping destroy the rainforest.
Well, he is, and he's kind of arrogant, and, like, he has this sort of, like, I thought, I don't know if I was reading into it too much, but here he is a human coming into this established, like, populated place with not humans, fairies, who live there and have a whole way of life or whatever. And he's, like, just determined to introduce all his human ways into this and, like, show them, like, you don't know this stuff? This is so cool. Let me teach you my cool human slang. Let me show you my cool lighter. Let me pull out my switchblade at one point, by the way.
Yeah.
And let me impress you all with my human Walkman. And it felt, like, very colonizer.
That,
you know?
Yeah.
To me.
Like, I hadn't really thought about that until you just went through all that.
Like, they have magic. They can make plants grow, dude.
They're so much better than anything you have to offer.
You've got a Walkman. And I think it only plays Land of Thousand Dances, which is a great song, but how many times can you listen to it, really? But I did notice, like, by the end of the movie, and I, again, this is not something I would have picked up on it as a kid, all this stuff that he's showing Krista, and it, and she's like, this is amazing. Humans are amazing. I'm so in awe of this human and his weird human words, like tubular and bodacious. By the end of the movie, she's like, I'm kind of over that. You were kind of, you destroyed the rainforest and then lied to me about it, which is like the worst thing you can do when you're trying to start a new relationship is destroy the rainforest and lie about
and
it. So it's nice that it gets turned around at the end and she realizes when he's like, you know, I should really go back to the human world. She's like,
you definitely should.
Yeah, you probably
here. Take this seed and leave.
That's even worse than just a pin. I gave her my heart. She gave me a pin. I gave her my heart. She gave me a seat.
There's that moment where it's like, I wish I could stay. And everyone's like, oh, well, no, you should go.
You should go.
You should probably go.
We understand.
I mean, even the like his impulse to carve her name in a tree. I don't know.
Did you forget everything we just talked about? Everything we've learned.
The part where he does it, he says, when he started doing that, I knew exactly. I mean, I've seen this movie so many times. And even when he's explaining what he's doing, he sounds so dumb. He's like, see, right here, C-R-Y-S. It's like, yeah, I know. You're spelling her name, but like. humans are so dumb.
Yeah. I think I am shocked at the fact that a movie with this topic, this subject matter, was made when it was made. It does not seem like the kind of thing that would have been made into like a pretty, I don't want to say mainstream, it wasn't Disney, but I mean you had like pretty big name actors in there. Turned into an animated movie for kids at this point in time.
Samantha Mathis is a big name too, especially at that time period for Krista. That's who voiced Krista. Tone Loke was in there as the whatever that lizard was.
Did you see who had a partial writing credit on the lizard song?
No.
Jimmy Buffett.
I didn't.
Really?
I looked at the soundtrack info and he was one of the writers of that.
The next time I talk to Jimmy Buffett, this is the first thing I'm asking him is, I need to know everything about your involvement with Ferngully and I need to know it now.
Because it's a very eclectic soundtrack. It's all over the place, but it just there's one song credit to Jimmy Buffett.
There. I have got to know everything about that. everything wow. about that experience.
Well, no and Cheech and Chong were two of the Beatle people.
Yes.
Very wow. odd little, I don't know. I guess this is when you had smaller studios doing things. It was like, you know what would be cool? Let's see what they're doing. Call them up.
Call Cheech and Chong. That and that one song is Raffy, isn't it?
The forest song.
The forest
yes.
is breathing, whatever.
Ferns are rejoicing.
That was what always stuck with me. Ferns are rejoicing.
It's a good mental picture, isn't it? Like, yay.
We're rejoicing.
So happy.
Yeah. There's always like, I mean, the music is all over the place, but it's so good. And it's always like kind of softly in the background, even when there's not a focal point of the song.
Mm-hmm. It's really beautiful. I mean, it's a, yeah. like the whole visuals in the, not just the characters, but in the backgrounds of all mm-hmm. the scenes are just gorgeous to look at, which I mean, makes sense. It's supposed to be set in a beautiful, untouched tropical rainforest. Mm-hmm. So,
oh, that scene where they're jumping in the puddles, like in the weird underground grotto. And mm-hmm. the puddles are changing colors. Yeah. That scene I was always like just fascinated by as a kid.
I used to be too. And that, even like, that scene stuck with me.
And like Maggie's dress,
mm-hmm.
the three-tiered flower dress. I always loved mm-hmm. her design. I thought she was the coolest old lady.
that dress I wanted so much when I was younger.
Yeah.
Charlie immediately echoed that sentiment.
Of course.
Yes, yeah, wanted that
that's
dress.
That's what I was going
to
ask.
But then I will say I had forgotten sort of what happens there to Maggie.
Oh,
she kind of evaporate into the universe.
Sacrifices herself a little bit.
I had forgotten that was coming. And like we're at that part where she kind of, so Maggie's like the older fairy who has all the secrets to like, how to creation, basically. Yes. And she's passing along this knowledge to Krista throughout the film and then very, like, literally passes along her magic by... I mean, I don't know that dying is the right word.
I think she returns to the earth.
Yeah. I mean, she just sort of, like, poofs into sparkles.
Yeah. It's fairy magic. They seem to have a better relationship with death than we do, you know.
Mm-hmm. She just kind of poofs.
I mean, she does. She kind of.
Well,
does
but
die.
That's so. After that happened, and I'm watching it, and I was like, "Oh no, oh no, I forgot." And then it happened, and Charlie went, "Where did Maggie go?" I went, "She, yeah, she was to the transferring earth. All of her energy and magic into into Krista and the tree to save the fairies." And she went, uh-huh, where'd she go? she's those sparkles all around them. But where did she go? I don't know, honey. I can't answer that question. It's bigger than me.
It's fairy magic.
That's what I just kept saying. Well, she turned into magic.
It's like in her name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know? That's mm-hmm. what she just became.
I don't know. I didn't know. I mean, like, I didn't know how to... I know I was just sort of like sidestepping it. And then finally she went, "You told me nobody died in this."
Oh.
I said, I'm going to be straight up. I really forgot this happened. and I'm very sorry about that.
At least it was a pretty, pretty death.
She was okay. Like it was, I think she was more like trying to pin me on like, "You told me nobody died and now somebody just died." And that was totally a lie. And
right.
Not so much like I'm upset.
Yeah.
Well, but she does have that, you know, beautiful little speech about, like, a part of me will always be with you. Because her magic is living on and back in. Like, I think the fairies are more chill about, like, you know, oh, we come from the earth, we go back to the earth, we turn into magic, energy, whatever. It's just it's a big concept for a child, but, you know. I don't think she was, like, dying. I think she was changing form.
Into sparkles.
That's sparkles. What...
Yes. Yeah, which is what I kept saying, but I didn't want to, you know, I don't want to be coy about it. Like, yes, I mean, she is gone.
Mm-hmm.
She is no longer there with them.
I like that the gentle, like, turning of the old fairy into sparkles is more disturbing than, like, Krista throwing herself into the flaming maw of the skull of Hexus. Like, that's a pretty intense scene.
It's funny because I worried in that moment, I was like, I'm going to have to reassure them that Krista isn't dead. Neither of them were worried at all. I think it's just that you've seen enough of these. Like, as a kid, you're used to
you
this
know
idea.
She's
like,
be fine.
This is a cartoon. There are fairies. There was funny. There's a funny bat. There's music. This fairy did not just die. Like, I feel like that on some level they knew that because they were not worried. When she popped out of that flower, they were like, mm-hmm, yes.
Okay.
Yes, of course. Like, obviously, she's not dead.
Right.
That was both of their favorite parts.
When she popped out of the flower?
Yes.
I remember that from being a kid, like that moment when she walks down and she's followed by the trail of flowers and you understand that now she has Maggie's magic.
Yes.
Oh, I always love that moment.
I always love that too. Yeah. Yeah, that generally that Maggie moves around and flowers follow her and then Krista has that at the end. I loved that detail. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, Zach goes off to like to warn the human world about how
we're doing is bad.
Yeah.
I know we're destroying rainforests, but you won't believe this.
He's the first human to say that, I guess.
Yeah, I think as a kid, I had a bit more of an optimistic hope of the kind of sway that this teenager could have over the rest of the world.
I mean, he's a white man, so.
That is true. That is true.
So he will be listened to more. But yeah, I remember thinking like, thank goodness, now Zach's gonna go tell everybody and we'll all be fine. And then they have that thing at the end where they're like, for our children and our children's children.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched it and I was like, I remember that. And then I had this moment like, crap. Our parents showed this to us, and now I'm sitting here with their children's children, my children, watching it. And things aren't any better.
They're actually worse.
Actually, Sid, I don't know if you know this, but it was the same temperature in New York this week as it was Phoenix, Arizona. I think things are getting bad.
I know. Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, and I saw that and I was like, that it's such an ominous thing to put at the end of a movie that you're watching in 2021 that was originally made in 1992. And like, yep, here are your children's children. Did anything get better? Nope. What did you do for your children's children?
Well, if only more people had seen Fern Gully, I blame the mouse.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I was going to say. Maybe there were a few months in there where everyone was like, oh, guys, we gotta do something about this. And then Disney was like, oh, never mind. Here you go. Don't worry about the environment.
Aladdin is great, though.
I mean, Aladdin is great, yeah, doesn't have a message that's going to save the world in it.
Yeah, I don't think Aladdin is an anti-environment film, but I don't think it's a pro-environment film. Like, I think it's just sort of neutral on
Well, I think
stance.
That's every Disney movie, right? They have to be, like, neutral in every aspect.
There's got
to
be some Disney movie that made a vague sort of nod towards environmentalism. Something?
Was a troll anything? In Central Park Disney?
I don't know.
Hmm.
I mean, I guess
Frozen?
Is that supposed to be in Pocahontas? Well, sort of?
I mean, they mess up that story real good, though. I don't know.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, I'm yeah, not. Yeah, no, no, this no. is not a defense of Pocahontas. I'm simply saying perhaps part of the message was supposed to be that the earth is good.
Maybe part of the problem is the generation of people that grew up watching Fern Gully, then grew up and realized there maybe aren't actually fairies in the forest.
So we lost interest in saving it.
So you lost interest in saving it, yeah.
We are forgetting Wall-E.
Wall-E.
Yes.
There we go.
Super environmental.
Pixar.
Well, that's right? Disney Pixar.
Well,
that's
yes,
what they were still
but I feel like Pixar goes there more.
That's
and
true.
Pixar did Up.
So is Pixar like Disney's conscience?
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Jiminy Cricket wasn't cutting it, so they fired him and hired Pixar.
And Pixar did Up, and Up made everyone cry within the first 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Got death in there.
I've never watched it since because I can't ever rewatch that.
Yeah.
I can't. I've seen it. I know what it is. It's in my head I have to live with that forever.
Yeah.
Can't watch that again.
Well,
you're right. Wall-E did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ratatouille, about animals. You should let rats cook in our kitchens because they have skills.
Let rats cook. Let rats cook.
Once rats cook, nature will start to heal.
Just saying. Just, I don't know.
It is written that once the rats are allowed in the kitchen.
That rat had a really good palate. Well, no, yes. I do think that at some point Disney acquired Ferngully because there was like a merger there where it bought like a part of Fox or something. So I think now Ferngully is technically owned by Disney.
Oh, it is?
I think so.
Where's that sweet, sweet Ferngully merch?
I know, right?
They pushed it out of the nation's conscience.
I was immediately curious if people had cosplayed a lot of Ferngully out there in the world. And so I had to look it up. And there were a lot of really excellent Ferngully cosplayers around the internet. Mm.
That's good.
Yeah.
That would be my whole day. If I saw people cosplaying as Krista and Pips at a con, that would be like the rest of the day for me.
You know, it didn't have great reviews. When I was looking at it, really? I was looking at it, like the Rotten Tomatoes and all that kind of stuff wasn't great. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't great. I was surprised.
Huh.
Is this Disney? Are they doing this?
I don't know. I mean,
a conspiracy?
I think like whether or not you
we're gonna
consider
get
yourself
big mouse
an eco
after
warrior.
Us, man.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, I know.
Maybe I should stop.
Whether or not you consider yourself an eco warrior, I think it's like it's beautiful, it's funny,
yeah.
It's got good music. It's not too long.
It's like an hour.
As a grown up who has to watch a lot of movies that are really aimed at children, I appreciate when they're not super long, mm-hmm. and my kids like them better. So like I feel like it ticks all the boxes. I mean, I don't know why it wouldn't be.
Oh, I would have enjoyed this as a kid, even without the whole message and understanding all that. I just would have liked this movie.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. And I don't know why it would get bad reviews.
It's an influential movie, too. I feel like there's a lot of movies that came after it that have moments that feel inspired by it. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know. The lizard song reminded me of the shiny song in Moana.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
It's very much one of those like spotlight moments that just kind of like, okay, now we're good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It definitely has that feel.
Yeah.
Huh. I wonder if Lynn was partially inspired by
Ferngully.
Well, by Ferngully, by the song that Tone Loke performed that was co-written or completely written,
co-written
by Jimmy Buffett.
They were
co-written by Jimmy Buffett from Ferngully.
It's all connected.
Ferngully's everywhere.
Wait, it's all coming together.
Oh no.
Hold on, let me get out my red string. It's all where does Taylor Swift come in?
She's in there somewhere.
She's in the reboot. There was a sequel. I'd have not seen it. I did not want to see it.
That, you know, I felt the same way.
Yeah. I saw there was a sequel.
Mm-hmm. It was it's a perfect little bite. It is exactly what it needs to be. It is not. I mean, I feel like that editing, you can feel the restraint. There is not one extra scene or song or line or moment that shouldn't be there. Mm-hmm. It is exactly what they need. They tell the story. They put it all out there. It's beautiful. It's done. And I think so often, especially like in movies that are aimed at kids or shows that are aimed at kids, there's just a bunch of like nonsense in there that they think kids want.
Yeah.
And this isn't like that.
Yeah.
It's just exactly what it needs to be. And then it's over and that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that everybody but the main characters has songs.
Yeah. That's true.
I thought about that. You get a lot of like side characters that have cool songs, but the Krista and Zach never sing.
No, they just sort of like float around to that one song.
Yeah.
And then they dance to Land of a Thousand Dances.
I love the way they animate Krista's dancing, because like at first
too.
She's sort of like fairy, like, you know, ooh, like, but then she's just like rocking out.
Yeah.
when she's like sort of like bent over and she's like throwing her fist up in the air back and forth, that image has been in my head ever since that moment of like, that is rocking out.
That is dancing.
That's what rocking out looks like. Yeah. I've probably done that before.
Your first rock
at
show.
A club or something. Yeah,
just trying to figure out how to dance from just memories from cartoons. Well, we know it. We know you still Bugs Bunny's dance. That was a thing.
You looked around at the club like, why is no one else doing the Ferngully dance?
Is this,
hello,
I'm doing it. Like, is this it?
Was this Sydney's early dancing? You just went from like the Ferngully dance to like the Bugs Bunny to like the Pigpen, like Charlie Brown. You probably had an Archie move in there.
Probably. I probably tried like to bang an imaginary tambourine against my hip at some point.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, thank you both for watching Fern Gully.
I enjoyed it.
It's excellent. Good.
I was disappointed I hadn't seen it before now. I mean, now I'm glad I've seen it, but
yeah,
can't believe I was never exposed to it.
Yeah, we failed there.
I was going to say, wasn't that your all's job?
Yeah, and that's why you haven't saved the environment.
Now I'm going to.
Put it on TikTok.
We need to put it out there and save the world.
Remind the Zoomers.
I know. For some reason, all it did for us is we had a whole generation of people that cut the plastic rings from our soda.
That is ingrained in my psyche. I do that without even thinking about it.
That's the one thing we could all get on board with.
Yeah.
Anything else was a bridge too far.
But I'll cut those rings.
We'll cut those rings.
Yeah.
Well.
But thank you. Thank you both.
Of course.
Tay, what's next?
I was thinking that we could talk about Moulin Rouge next.
Yay. Ooh, I love Moulin Rouge.
Yeah.
Baz Luhrmann movie from, what year it came out?
We'll know by next week.
Yes. Yeah, sorry, I haven't seen it in such a long time.
Me neither.
It's always one of my favorites. One of the soundtracks, mm-hmm. musicals, combos that mm-hmm. I have on constant rotation.
Yeah. Yep.
Yes, I'm excited.
Me too.
I may not share that one with the children.
That one
is the best.
Spoiler alert, somebody definitely dies in that.
Yeah, and it's like death dies, not like magic dies. Yeah.
No, it's hardcore death.
Yeah.
And like sex is a big theme there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of... not for kids.
Not
yet. Maybe some of the musical numbers.
I think they'd like the music.
Yeah.
The costumes.
Yes.
Okay. All right, well, we will check out Moulin Rouge for next week.
All right.
And thank you all for listening. You can tweet at us at StillBuff. You can email us at StillBuffering@MaximumFun.org. And you should go to MaximumFun.org and listen to all the podcasts. They're great. And thank you to the Novellas for our theme song, Baby Change Your Mind.
This has been your cross-generational guide to the culture that made us. I am Riley Smurl.
I'm Sydney McRoy.
And I'm Taylor Smurl.
I am Still Buffering.
And
I am too.
Trying to think of a baddie line we haven't already quoted, but I feel like we quoted them all. I know.
1, 2, 1, 2, 3. Hi, everybody. My name is Justin McElroy.
I'm Sydney McElroy.
We're both doctors and...
Nope, just me.
Okay, well, Sydney's a doctor and I'm a medical enthusiast and we create... Okay. Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine.
Every week I dig through the annals of medical history to bring you the wildest, grossest, sometimes dumbest tales of ways we've tried to treat people throughout history.
And lately we do a lot of modern fake medicine because everything's a disaster, but it's slightly less of a disaster every Friday right here on MaximumFun.org as we bring you Sawbones, a marital tour of misguided medicine. And remember,
don't drill a hole in your head.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.